Welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
And I'm Martin Woodward.
That's right. So Dan is out for another couple weeks here, down building a car at West Coast Customs. But Martin, you've been on the show before.
Indeed.
Yeah, the first time you were here, you were showing us a fancy new belt buckle you got because you were the ALM MVP of the year.
MVP of the year, and then I've lost my belt buckle. I'm now a blue shirt, now Microsoft staff.
For two years, actually.
Yeah,
how's it been going?
It's been okay so far.
This week is your anniversary.
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So most people at Microsoft, they put out like a pound of M&Ms for every year they've been at the company.
Is that right?
Yeah, right outside their office.
Okay. I put mine outside my office.
Work at home.
In my home in Northern Ireland, so my children have probably stolen all those by now.
Probably, I would imagine so. So it's a good year for them, or a good week for them every time your anniversary comes
up. In fact, my eldest has got a wobbly tooth. That's probably why.
Oh, nice. Yeah, all those M&Ms. Nice. Well, our top story here, so this is really interesting. I'm sorry, I'm going to botch the name, I'm sure, but Multi Shaked?
Yeah, sure. He's up from Vancouver, just up the road.
Oh, is he? Uh-huh. Is he? Vancouver, B.C., not Vancouver, Washington.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Probably Vancouver, B.C.
Uh-huh.
So he's put together this interactive .NET tutorial, and it itself is built using Silverlight. But it's really cool because he's got this video of himself in the top corner. He's got the little like captions.
It's really, really good quality.
Really nice set of content.
Uh-huh.
And you being primarily a Java developer can finally learn .NET.
Finally.
Yeah.
No, it's really good though. And it's in depth and he's adding features to it as he goes along. Currently it's sort of the first, you know, he said it was the first tutorial. So mm-hmm. I went through and had a quick look and went into the first one and all this huge content comes up.
Yeah.
It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Giving it away for free as well.
So. Yeah, super cool. I don't know what his business model is. I don't know if
he's a great guy.
Good job. So, very, very cool. So next up, this is the Windows Azure SDK version 1.6 and the Windows Azure HPC, High Performance Computing, Scheduler SDK, Software Development Kit.
Catchy name.
Yes, exactly. Was released. And so this includes a bunch of stuff if you're just, you know, a Windows Azure developer. I didn't mean to say just a Windows Azure developer. If you are a Windows Azure developer, it contains a ton of stuff.
All the latest bits.
Yep. And this also...
What's the HPC thing, then?
Oh, so HPC, so that's High Performance uh-huh. Computing. So that's something that we've had for a while for Windows Server, of course. So if you're doing enormous workloads and processing and mm-hmm. curing cancer and searching for extraterrestrial intelligence, then you would probably use some sort of HPC workload. And it coordinates all this. I'm not an HPC expert, but from what I understand, it coordinates huge number crunching across a huge number of machines.
So you just put those machines and you can have them in the cloud?
Yes. So now you can take advantage of the elastic scale of the cloud and then orchestrate all of those same types of workflows across the cloud. But the other thing that I liked about this, us being TFS guys,
uh-huh.
is that it also includes native build, MS build tasks that you can use for team
build automation. Mm-hmm. Finally, fantastic!
Which you could have done before with Azure, but you would have had to go like find somebody's blog post. It was just unofficial, right? So this is the official MS build support, which gives you team build support.
Brilliant!
Yeah,
to the cloud.
To the cloud. We're all in. That's right. Next one, handy NuGet packages for Windows Azure and Windows Phone developers.
Yeah, so I had a quick look at this. It was, you know, NuGet's fantastic for mm-hmm. adding these features in,
mm-hmm.
and it's just a great way of pulling in the additional libraries, you know, that the team make available.
Yeah.
It just seemed really easy getting started, especially if you just get a blank solution file and you want to pull in some references, you want to get your libraries, just pull them all in. It's really
right. Yeah, and so what Wade's done, I love what Wade's team is doing. I don't know if you follow much of what they do, but they do like the social gaming toolkit for Windows Azure,
right.
the Windows Phone development kit for Windows Azure, mm-hmm. and they've also branched off to Android and iOS.
Yeah, I saw some of that stuff.
Yeah, so they're just taking they're building on top of what the platform APIs give you and making all these starter kits that make it really easy for you to get started. And then the other thing that they noticed was that some people don't like to download the entire starter kit to then pull out things and add them to the application, whereas NuGet's really good at that. So they've added those libraries to make it easy for you to do things like add access control services, access to your phone development your phone kit, which then talks to the cloud.
So and it just downloads the little individual components you need and adds the references into Visual Studio.
That's right.
Fantastic.
That's right. So I have a question for you.
Okay.
For people that don't know you, you're the guy who builds the Team Explorer Everywhere plugin for Eclipse that talks to Team Foundation Server. So I'm familiar with NuGet. What's the equivalent in Eclipse? Do they have like a similar?
Yeah. So in the Java world and the Eclipse world, they use a thing called Maven, which
is
fairly similar, and it handles dependencies and things like that. So
okay.
Yeah. And you would at build time, it can pull dependencies down and that sort of thing. So no, it's that's the equivalent technology over there, but I don't know if Maven packages for the phone stuff, but you know, the NuGet stuff's great anyway.
And that can install additional things into my Eclipse IDE in addition to runtime components and libraries.
The Maven stuff's really designed. It's a lot more platform agnostic.
Okay.
And then in Eclipse world, there's a plugin called M2 Eclipse you can use, which can hook Maven into Eclipse.
Oh, so, okay.
There you go.
All right.
For any Eclipse developers out there, there you are.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is an interesting one you had a look at, speaking of heterogeneous cross-platform development. So this is talking about building a RESTful service in Windows Azure.
Yep.
And you had a look at the video. This is by Bruno Turcali.
Yeah, it was really great timing because I was actually wanting to do something like this myself.
Yep.
And you know, just get started in Azure. There's a lot of the guys in the TFS team are very familiar with Azure now because we've done a lot of work porting TFS into the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
But I hadn't done any of that work, and I was feeling a bit left out. Didn't really know what they're talking about, so I wanted to get myself up to speed on Azure. And this is a great tutorial, just getting started. Takes you all the way through building your Visual Studio project, and then getting it up into Azure and using the consoles. And all around building this RESTful web service application.
Right.
And then there's samples and things of actually hooking into that from iOS and from Android and from Windows. It's really, really good.
Right. And I think REST tends to be a really good pattern to follow for cloud, because when you're dealing with the cloud, your infrastructure is generally stateless.
Uh-huh, exactly.
Your web roles can go on and off at any time, can move from one machine to another.
And it's a lot more scalable as well. You know, when it's stateless, it helps you just add more instances of that role if you want to scale out.
Right, exactly. So following a pattern like REST, while not required in the cloud, it tends to lend itself very well to the cloud. And so this other article is actually talking about how do you think about building REST in the first place, and it goes through the five principles of REST, and then it talks about it shows some samples of how you would use WCF to actually implement a REST service as well.
Yeah, and obviously as well, with it being REST, back to the previous example, it's so much easier to just consume those from any random sort of operating system and application and things. So
yeah, like my Commodore 64.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, but I was a VIC-20 man myself.
Oh, yeah?
Old school.
No, I'm keeping it real with Pete Brown. He's a big Commodore 64 guy. So JS Lint for Visual Studio 2010. So speaking of the Team Foundation service on Windows Azure, you said that these guys are using JS Lint, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, we do the new Team Foundation service that's on Azure.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that work is all JavaScript, and HTML based, quite rich HTML. So there's a lot of JavaScript code there. And JS Lint's a static code analysis tool for JavaScript, and give you some errors, flag that somewhere, a bit like FXCop, but for JavaScript.
Yeah.
And then this is the extension which allows you to run JS Lint inside Visual Studio 2010. Hmm.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. So I didn't even know about JS Lint until we saw this story today.
There we
go. So that's cool. And then JS Hint looks like there's maybe an old version called JS Hint. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. I just know of JS Lint.
All right. So Visual Studio 2010, new project template for building a TFS utility. So this comes from our friend Nino Leahy.
Nino.
That's right. And so part of the reason you're in town is you're actually here at the ALM Summit.
Yes.
In Redmond, and Nino's here as well.
Nino's here. He did a big book signing last night.
Oh,
he was signing
right.
books for like 3 hours last
nice.
Night. He had this huge queue of people.
No
it
kidding.
Helps because he gave a copy of a book away to everybody at the conference.
Oh, sure.
But
that does help.
But we did want him to sign it. So.
Nice. That's awesome.
And it's a good book as well with Sam Guckenheimer.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he's put a project together. You know, if you're doing any Team Foundation server extensibility and you want to go in and just, make TFS do something or talk to Team Foundation Server from your own .NET application, it's great, and we've provided a full SDK and API to be able to do that. But you have to go bring in the right assembly from somewhere and remember which one it is, and you know it takes a little while.
Right.
So what Nino did back in 2008, and he's done it again for Visual Studio 2010. It's just a project template. You do file new project, and it brings a an empty class library with all of the references already in there for Team Foundation Server. So it's quite simple, but it saves a bunch of time, you know, pulling everything in.
Yeah, I mean, good for Nino, and in a way, shame on us for not shipping that just with our SDK. But I know those guys are quite busy. We're creating opportunity for partners.
And
exactly. Yeah.
Speaking of partners,
speaking of Team Foundation Server, so I got into an interesting debate. I was on a panel down in TechEd Africa, and some folks were asking how you would go about structuring a team project, or do you use multiple team projects when you're taking advantage of Team Foundation Server? And I apologize to our audience who don't use TFS. Yeah. This is going to be a TFS-heavy show. That's what we do, right? And generally speaking, our guidance is to have fewer rather than more Team Foundation Server team projects.
Yes.
Because then it's much easier to do reporting and link work items and move them around to different servers and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But one of the challenges is that people complain about when they use this for big teams is that there's no support for built-in folders with respect to your build definitions.
Yeah.
So if you've got, like at Microsoft, we've got 1,500 people in one team project building Visual Studio, and we have probably, you know, 150 build definitions.
Which we do,
Yeah, exactly. So scrolling through that list and trying to figure out which one was mine, you know, that can be really difficult.
Yeah, and we encourage, you know, people to use a naming convention quite often. So, you know, you'd have like my team CI, my team nightly, and those sorts of things.
Right.
And Terjay, I hope I pronounced his name right. I know him really well.
Another of our MVPs.
Exactly. Yeah. Another MVPs. He was like, well, why can't you just put a character in that name and then pretend it's a folder sort of thing, which was a good idea.
Yeah.
And then he built his own Team Explorer extension. So in the little Team Explorer, he built that extension and then parses the name and just, you know, it fakes a folder kind of thing.
That's awesome.
And it works really well.
Yeah.
So we added folders for work items. We didn't quite get around to it for builds, but, you know, shame on us because he filled in that opportunity.
Once again, creating partner opportunity.
Okay,
so
great.
This is how these guys earn their MVPs. So you know how it is.
I do know how it is.
Yes. And so, you know, all these areas that you say, hey, Microsoft should have done that.
We should have, yeah.
If you wanted to send us feedback on that, there's now a brand new Visual Studio 11 developer preview feedback tool. So if you've used like some of the betas of like Office and Windows, you know, they have that send a smile where you can click happy, frowny, you know, take a screenshot, say, hey, I was trying to do whatever and it crashed. But we've kind of been jealous of the fact that Windows and Office have had that for a while.
Yes.
And so my friend Doug Turnier actually worked with the product team to put together this feedback tool that you can now install right in the Visual Studio 11 developer preview and then send that same type of feedback straight to Microsoft.
And those bits of feedback are listened to very strongly as well. You know, you send the feedback off and you think maybe it goes into some sort of hole somewhere.
Right.
But I remember I sent similar feedback back in sort of a 2008 time. And one particular one I did, I got this dialogue that came up, and it had there's a question that just didn't make any sense, and then sort of seven buttons all lined up in a row.
Oh,
and
nice.
I sent a frowny saying, I don't know what this means, so I clicked the middle one.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just a bit sort of snarky.
Yeah.
And then about an hour later, I got a big smiley face came back from one of the product groups.
Oh,
so
wow.
They were really, you know, were on top of the feedback and listening to it.
Nice.
But it's not to forget as well, we should give a plug for the user voice site, visualstudio.uservoice.com.
Yeah. You know, I kind of have a mixed opinion on user voice. I think it's great to surface some of the things that are kind of the top 10 features, if you will.
Yeah.
I think beyond that, my personal take is that sometimes it becomes noise, and sometimes it also it's hard for people to actually understand when they read something and they vote it up, whether or not they're actually voting for their issue or something that just kind of sounds similar.
Right.
Because user voice only, it doesn't give you the ability to attach screenshots and talk about version information and things like that. So I might be talking about Visual Studio, a problem I have in Visual Studio 2005, and you might be talking about something in Visual Studio 2010 and they're totally different. I don't know. I think, yes, user voice, visualstudio.uservoice.com. Does give you the ability to kind of load things up, and it's and we do pay attention to that.
Yeah.
But that's
more of a big issue, whereas this is for individual feedback.
Like this particular dialogue needs to be fixed. Never go to user voice for that. Just file a connect bug, and that'll get routed to the owner.
Quite hard to file those bugs, whereas it's just really easy to just send feedback back.
Right, exactly. So this actually goes to connect, is my understanding, but it does it abstracts a lot of the steps you would have had to do before to file that feedback.
And when you do send it off to connect, it arrives actually as a work item in Visual Studio.
That's
amazing.
That's right, absolutely. So this is interesting, and I wanted to cover it because we don't talk a lot about touch programming. We talked a lot in the last few shows. We talked a lot about HTML5 and phone development and Metro style development and things like that. But we haven't really talked a lot about the what they're calling tactile programming here.
Yeah. Because I saw this and I saw Surface 2, and I thought, oh, I don't have that big table. Is this for me? When you were saying it is.
Yeah. So this happens to focus on WPF4 and the Surface SDK 2 as its example. But it turns out that anything you take advantage of here, according to the article, will work on any any Windows 7 and above operating system.
With
that in mind, everything's going to be touch enabled soon, right?
Yeah. So if you had one of those shiny PDC build tablets.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I think that the PDC tablets were unitouch, but the build tablets are multi-touch. So you can start doing some more interesting things with that.
Okay.
So anyway, if you're doing touch programming or if you're trying to get into it,
if you have a big table.
If you have a really big Surface, what do they call it? Big ass table. Is that, So that's good to look at. Mm-hmm. So phone gap. This is something that I don't think we covered on this week on Channel 9, but you were telling me about this. So
yeah.
So phone gap is kind of this industry movement, right?
Well, no, it's it was a company built. It's a framework for building HTML5 and JavaScript applications, which you can then compile into native code for the different platforms. So you can take HTML5 JavaScript app and compile an iOS version, an Android version, and a Windows Phone 7 version.
So it's when you run it on the phone itself, it's no longer an HTML5 app. It's actually a native XAML app
and it puts it on as a proper native application. Has the wrap around it. And then you can submit it into the relevant stores marketplaces. So Apple have given their blessing to some of these applications, and over on the Windows Phone side, Windows Phone Mango supports phone gap applications.
Because I seem to recall Apple for a while was not doing that. They were actually very opposed to the idea that someone would take an HTML5 app, write to some lowest common denominator, and then push it out to all these devices.
Well, no, they were more worried not so much the HTML5 thing, because they've had quite good HTML5 support. It was more worried about people taking other frameworks and compiling them down well, this one now has been the phone gap was bought by Adobe, I believe.
Okay.
And then the actual application's been donated over to the Apache Foundation. Yeah.
So getting back to the article. No, that's good. That's good introduction. And then getting back to the article at hand here, Glenn Gordon, he's kind of started this series now where he's talking about how to handle things like orientation and like how to do phone gap programming so that it works well on Windows Phone 7.
Great.
So it's good to see that. Mm-hmm. So last week we talked about some great free icons you could get for Windows Phone 7 applications, and then here Andrew Coates is blogging and pointing out all this free art that you can use for your Windows Phone 7 application as well.
Yeah. Now, important to remember that there's a terms of use document in there, and that says it's specifically for Windows Phone 7. You can't go take this and use it for clip art in your PowerPoint presentations or something like that. So it is for Phone 7.
Who reads the terms of use?
Who reads the EULA?
Yeah, exactly. I do, of course, all the time. So XNA, this is near and dear to my heart. I don't know if you knew this. I was actually on the XNA team for a year.
I didn't know that.
I did. I was the original.
Was that before or after the J Sharp?
It was after J Sharp.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I was the.
You had a hit.
I did. Yeah. I was the original XNA product manager.
Wow.
Yeah. Way back when, 2005, I think.
Gosh.
And so anyway, this is the XNA Developers Survival Kit. Which is kind of a clever branding on basically just a bunch of XNA resources for XNA 4.0.
There's loads of stuff for XNA 4.
Loads of stuff. So they basically came up with this as they were developing the Nelxon XNA game engine. So built on a bunch of libraries and engines and everything else. So I don't have time much for doing XNA programming anymore. Mm-hmm. This looks like
some great starters and some great samples for doing it XNA. Then go there.
Yeah, absolutely. So gotta love it. That's cool. And then here's a nice little Channel 9 video from TechEd, or it's a TechEd video, which is on Channel 9. This is how do we do language design at Microsoft. And so this is really kind of interesting. Some of my favorite people, Don Syme from F#, Lisa Feigenbaum from kind of like C# and Visual Basic, on a panel talking about that. And you mentioned J#.
Yeah.
Back when, 10 years ago when I first joined the company, I was the J# product manager. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting for us to kind of look across and say, okay, how does J# get its own identity versus VB versus mm-hmm. C# and C++, and now we've got F# and all these other languages, right? And I think what we found in the end was really that at least for C# and Visual Basic, they kind of need to co-evolve, because if you're a Visual Basic programmer by just history and you came over from VB6, maybe you chose Visual Basic and you need to grow and evolve and build the same types of applications that a C# developer, maybe who has a Java background, is more comfortable with C# would end up doing. But really interesting to take a look at this.
A top tip for you as well with that one. It was a panel, and so what they did, because I remember being at Atlanta, I think it was, when they did that one.
Yeah.
So it was a panel discussion, and they basically had some questions to get started and had some questions from the audience and things. So on the slide, it was really just one... It was just some questions on the slide, So a top tip for me would be maybe download the audio version of that and, take it out on your favorite audio playing device and listen to it when you're doing some chores.
My Rio player. Yeah. Got it. Cool. Good to know. Pro tip. And so speaking of languages and compilers and everything else, here's Karen Liu and Anders Heilsberg and the rest of the Roslyn team in what actually turned out to be one of the shortest Charles Toye videos I've ever seen. It weighed in at about 33 minutes. But they're talking about Roslyn and why you should care and like how they went about designing it and things like that.
Yeah, and it's, listening to those guys, I don't have a computer science degree.
No,
you know,
it's rocket science.
And yeah, you're just listening to them, it's like, wow, it's crazy. Yeah. It's also good to watch the video because as it pans around, you can see all the pattern plaques on Anders' wall and things like that.
If you look at that screenshot, there's dozens. I mean, you could pave a driveway with those.
Yeah, so. And on he's got the cubes on the thing there on the back of his wall. He's got all of his plaques. You can see that later on as it pans around. It's quite good.
That's awesome. So. I just want one. Do you have any?
No.
Do you have pattern cubes?
No.
Oh, I would expect you to have had one. Now, that's cool. Well, that's something to work on. Times for picks of the week. So my pick of the week, it's not directly related to developers. Greg was kind of giving me a hard time about this, but I think actually, given my time on the Xbox team, mm-hmm. I think this really is something that is interesting for developers. This is a two-part series on the making of the Xbox. The second part of the series is the making of the Xbox 360. Uh-huh. And we now look at Xbox 360 as kind of the dominant hardcore gaming platform. Uh-huh. Certainly with Kinect and everything else that's going on there.
My kids think I work for the coolest company in the world.
As you do.
Yeah, as I do.
Yes. And so, it's kind of seems like this foregone conclusion that, of course, Microsoft is a leader in the game industry. But it wasn't always like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if you remember the day you read about the Xbox originally coming out.
I remember seeing it. Yeah, definitely. I remember the store I was in when I saw my first one and like that. And it was kind of like, so is this a PC?
Yeah,
but
exactly.
In plastic?
Yeah. It was massive. Uh-huh, I remember reading the article and thinking, why is Microsoft doing this?
Yeah.
This is so stupid.
Uh-huh.
But it's a really good thing that they did, because Sega kind of dropped off and all these other, console players kind of dropped off. And I think it's really created some great competition for the industry.
And the innovation now as mm-hmm. well in that area is fantastic. And is it 10 years, is it?
Yeah, 10 years since Halo came out. I think it was 2000, or 11 years since the actual Xbox, original Xbox came out, if I'm not mistaken. But really interesting, lots of fun anecdotes about conflict between the teams and how they kind of had these different Bill G and Steve Ballmer reviews.
Wow.
Of course, it's all, I can't say whether or not it's officially true. I wasn't in the room or anything like that. But why it's important to developers is because Microsoft Microsoft really looked at how difficult it was to build console games, you know, something like $30 million to build your average platformer these days.
Wow.
And also the further difficulty when you have to go build this for both PC and Xbox and everything else.
Yeah.
And they said, let's do what we did in the business application space, which is create a great set of development tools, a great experience for debugging these applications.
Uh-huh.
So one of the things they talk about is the ability for you to freeze frame the application at any point in time, so that you can say, how did this pixel get to be this particular color and like kind of rewind.
I saw that in the build keynotes. I was like, we do that?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Exactly.
And you can like play a bit forward and switch on layers.
It's kind of like IntelliTrace, right?
But for games.
And so Xbox had it first. So anyway, it was a trip down memory lane for me going back and reading this article, and it's about 20 pages long, but I read every page. It was just really fascinating to look at.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, mine's a little bit different. So I was at EclipseCon a couple of weeks ago, and one of the sessions there, the guys had taken the Eclipse SDK. So it was Jonas Helming from a company called Eclipse Sourcing Music.
Yeah.
And they have he's a PhD, sort of he goes in and teaches some PhD students from time to time, and he had some of their students help him put together the Kinect SDK. And hook it up via a C bridge into Eclipse, the Java IDE. And then he did all sorts of things, like in Eclipse they have some architecture diagrams, you know, like similar to what we have in Visual Studio.
Yep.
And so he took and then modeled it to skeletal tracking.
That's
and
awesome.
So he had like an architecture diagram but as a skeleton sort of dancing around.
Yeah.
And
then in the video they had the, what was
Duke, the Oracle guy.
The
mascot. And it was just sort of doing things and it was following him even though he was like not dressed
not
up
really
as a human.
Yeah,
it was
exactly.
really good. So
that's
it's
awesome.
A great thing. It's a short video, just 2 minutes, but it was one of the highlight sessions.
And I like the gestures that they use. Like compile was something like this.
Well, and they were in the actual session, they were getting the audience to do the sort of actions to try and do group debug and things like that.
And he
also did voice control.
Huh.
But to do voice control, we all had to sort of be really,
really,
really
quiet.
And then when something worked, everybody wanted to clap, but they couldn't.
Exactly.
No, it was a good session.
That's awesome. Very cool. And do you know if that one was recorded as well?
The session wasn't recorded, but they did this. It was
highlight reel.
Exactly. It's a 2 minute video, and you get everything you got out of the session anyway. So
got it.
It was good.
Got it. Cool. Well, Martin, thanks for being
for having
with
me.
Us, and maybe we'll see you in a couple of months when you're back in town.
Exactly.
Cool.
Thank you.